So the hole that I'm dreaming about is a downhill
hole one at Maple Hill.
Par three. It is a fairway or distance driver, and it is a downhill hyzer line. There is a beautiful lake that you get to throw over. And the more gutsy you are with your drive, the less scary of a putt you might have.
14 at Maple Hill.
Yeah.
For the birdie on 14 at Maple Hill. It was about time. We just needed these guesses to start.
No, I had it. I had it too.
It wasn't really open airspace though, like off the tee.
I mean, I feel like it is like through the, like there's a chance of a breeze. I mean, you're not throwing through like a wooded gap. It's like pretty wide open once you get through that little.
We're going to be there next week.
Yeah, we will. Well, welcome back to Crushed Pepper, episode 26.
26.
The Crushed Boys and the Pepper Man are here in Vermont. We're in my bedroom at the Tamarax Lodge as a part of the Smuggler's Notch Resort.
We're in very close proximity to hole nine at Brewster.
So I found that out. I found out how to get there from here. I mean, it's like a 3-minute walk. And there's also a porta potty that I didn't know was ever a thing off of the back of hole nine's tee pad. So if you ever get to that spot and you really need to pee, or God forbid.
God poo. Forbid.
Poo. No, can I just say, if there's a porta potty and woods, if you're a man and you choose porta potty, I don't know. I don't think I can possibly agree with that choice.
I agree.
Okay, good.
Wait, so what about like at D-Glo when I used it on 13? Where
if
else?
It's right there.
Yeah, then, but I would still argue that if, even on 13 where there's like no place to pee, I would probably hold it for an extra hole and then go in the woods on the next hole.
Really?
Wow. Yeah.
So you're I'm holding it in.
Definitely. If I'm in a spot where I can't, but there would be a porta potty, I'm going to hold it until there's a natural place to go.
Wow.
This is very interesting.
So here's something crazy, is I was peeing in that porta potty while the rest of my card mates were teeing off because I was on the box. And I looked through the little, you know how there's like the little, like it's like
vents.
A screen? And I looked through and made eye contact with Connor O'Reilly, who was next up on the box. And he looked at me and I looked at him. And it was like every time you're in the porta potty and you look out through those vents, you think to yourself that it's like a one-way mirror. Nobody can see you, but you can peep on everyone. And that was the first time that anybody has ever like seen me through the porta potty.
Oh, my gosh.
I'm always jealous for all the courts that don't have any gallery that they can just pee whenever. If you have any people watching, it makes it like infinitely more difficult to find good moments and areas.
Yeah,
to
pee. You're that's walking back in the woods and thinking like, how far should I go? Is this far enough?
That's why Paul Macbeth impresses me, because Paul Macbeth is on the top of my frequent peer list of all the guys who pee the most.
No, Casey White is.
You think
Casey? I would say Casey's probably triple Paul.
Whoa.
Anytime I've ever been around Paul, it's been quite frequent.
Yeah, you know why it happens?
Nate Sexton has told me about this.
Oh, it's a thing. You know why it happened?
Because he's hydrated.
No, well.
And nervous.
Yeah, but I'm saying, do you know why he's hydrated?
Energy drinks?
He fainted when he was like 13 or 14. And I think, I asked him about this once. And I think it was, he passed out two times in the span of like 3 months, one summer playing baseball, and that was it.
Never again.
Never again. Yeah. But Paul and Kale, like, I remember playing league rounds with Kale where it was like every three holes he would be peeing in the woods. And I don't know, I feel like my goal is to go through my whole water bottle by the end of the round, but I feel like I only pee like once, maybe twice per round. Maybe I think two times would be, I would remember that.
Isn't this supposed to be the email episode?
Yeah, but we have to get it started off with something.
Yeah. Well, we're in Vermont, which we're currently two rounds into the GMC, and we're going to rip through the news if that's what we want to do. I think that is.
We should talk about Kristen, there, and that's all.
We got to talk about your second tournament ace of this year, of this decade, basically.
Basically. Of the 2020s.
It was a pretty bokeh shot, right?
Unbelievable. I mean, my first ace in Estonia this year made no sense to me. I couldn't believe it. That hex that I aced with, like, I was battling with that disc for, like, weeks for tournaments. Like, I couldn't figure it out. And then that happened. And now the disc is retired on my wall, which is kind of nice. I should show you what I did with that. It's really cool. And then the bokeh, obviously, a new prototype being released next week at Maple Hill. I've really been hyping it up a bit. It flies like so good. It's everything I wanted it to be. But I've been throwing it like absolute garbage. Like, I just can't find the right angles. I can't find my release point right now. In general, I'm just shanking shots basically every other hole right now. But especially with that disc, I just can't freaking throw a good shot in practice or tournament play. But I never gave up. I gave it more and more chances, probably more than it deserved right now. So I pulled it out at hole 10 again. It's a 475-foot par 3. A little breezy today, too. A little headwind. And out of my hand, I was like, it was like a slight yank. So I pulled it a bit more right than I wanted to. But it just missed the apple trees on the right, and it just like flipped up to flat and then just carried to absolute dead center. And the craziest thing is that yesterday, Evan Smith, shout out, aced the same hole in the exact same way. I don't know if you guys saw Evan's ace, but It was like picture perfect, exact same. And I was like, in my head, I was like, wow. How do you get so lucky to ace a hole that crazy? Like, that is the sickest ace on this property, and maybe one of the sickest aces on tour you can hit. It's just so cool. We've been playing this hole for over a decade. It's never really changed. I guess it got a bit longer,
maybe.
Has
anyone even come close?
No one's aced it until yesterday when Evan got it, ever.
I filmed Eli Swanson in round one last year, hit the band.
So, it's unbelievable.
It's crazy.
You look like you're in disbelief. I'm watching it right now.
I wish the camera guy, it was just a fan who filmed it, because Dustin and I stopped recording, which is also really ironic, during tournament play yesterday. I can get into that if you guys are interested. So Dustin wasn't filming for the first round of the year. And that's, of course, when I get the sickest ace of my life. But no, in my head yesterday, I was like, oh, I'm so sick of these players getting so lucky. Like, I would never get an ace like that. That's insane. And then the next day, I'm like, okay, wow. I just stop talking or thinking at all about anything and just keep on throwing.
Be a passenger in your own seat of your brain.
That's what Eagle told me he's trying to do this weekend. Instead of be the main character in his movie, he's just trying to watch
I'm just watching, see how it unfolds.
There's just something about this freaking course that doesn't sit right with me. Like, these fairways are literally not fairways. Whenever your disc hits the ground on any given hole, except for the grassy ones, it's just a complete gamble what's going to happen. Mm-hmm. And I just can't get over it. I was in my head so bad yesterday, like almost cried and went home.
Yep.
I didn't even play that bad. It wasn't even about the score. I was just like, I don't know what it was. Maybe a bit of burnout. We're at that stage of the year where it starts being just a real grind, especially with my freaking video project. I can't believe we're doing it still.
Yeah, you're there, and so you definitely have changed like a bit of the process over the season. Oh my God, really?
Me and Joey
matching
just have the identical toe socks on.
We just turquoise and blue.
We just pressed our feet together.
We did. I didn't notice that. We're still going strong, you and me. We're still toe socking.
Simon's not a part of the gang.
It's okay. Everybody makes their own choices. I will say.
Were those Simon's?
No, but his are. Yes, I have Simon's old pairs that I wear. And
you can get the rest of them next week when we're home.
I have my entire sock pocket is all toe socks. I don't have a single pair of non-toe socks with me on the road, which is crazy.
That's what I like to hear.
I mean, I'm never looking back. I'm in a very happy spot with that. Yeah, you went ambitious with video stuff this year, and I think all of your fans should be, at the end of this year, very grateful for what you did for them. I mean, it was not something you had to do, but it was something you felt compelled to do. You've adjusted like the output across the season, and then, yeah, you guys made a decision after yesterday to not film round clips. My guess, and then I'll let you say the real reason, my guess is that it's not fun to make, and if the videos on the back end aren't like doing exceptionally better than any other videos, then eliminate the ones that aren't fun to make and make other ones if they're all going to perform the same.
Yeah, it's a combination of a lot of things, but it just started to be like in my head during the rounds that I was like dreading having to do a round recap afterwards, and then that spirals you down on top of all the other pressure and bad shots, and it's just like it was one layer too much of misery yesterday, and I just knew we only have 3 events left, and there's really no, it just felt like it's not worth it to keep pushing through this for no apparent reason. Like, we're just doing it because we want to, and if we stop really wanting or enjoying it, then we might as well switch it up.
Yep. I mean, that was the point when we made Beyond Disc Golf that I kept saying to Simon the whole time. It's like, this is only working if you're having fun doing it, and if it stops being fun, then we either stop or we change it so that it is fun.
That's right.
So ironic that it happened, but also shout out to the fan. Do you know the name of the fan?
Yeah, I know his name's Andrew.
Shout out Andrew. This is why you always film. Now, that's a bad thing to say because that means that you're going to film a bunch of shots, everyone who's listening. But
someone actually behind the basket also filmed it.
Wow.
But that video, unfortunately, didn't turn out that great because halfway through the flight, he thought the disc was going to hit him. So he started like jumping around and trying to, I guess, see where the disc is. And then once the disc hits the basket, the phone is just full shaking.
Yeah,
and
of course.
There was one fan behind the basket and like 10 behind us. So it was a very intimate moment.
Yeah.
It was cool, though. Definitely the coolest, maybe not actually the coolest Dream and Ace ever. I think my very first one is forever my favorite, but this is one of the better holes you can get it on, especially with a new signature disc before it's released. Kind of.
Yeah, you were.
Kind of epic.
You were talking about it in the practice round.
It's my dream. Yeah, you're right.
And, I forgot about that. They got cut out when you talked about it because then you threw the bokeh
so bad
and it didn't, you didn't want to put, I don't think Maria or you doing the editing was like,
Maria.
It was like she didn't want to make you look bad or
Maria,
the bokeh look
Maria
bad.
Maria wants to make you look good more than you want yourself.
I appreciate Maria for that reason.
Well, and I think that's why she's a great editor, because anybody who knows her on any level knows that, like, not even like she doesn't even mess around with that. Like, she, you know, that like if it was me editing, there would be like
bad shots.
Well, or there would just be this like concern that something slips past and makes it through. With Maria, like, I have full confidence that like she, especially because of what she asks me too. Like, part of it's like a language barrier. So like sometimes like the things that you say, like you were like, oh, that was, there was one this week where you were like, that was a kick and a half. And she didn't know what like the and a half thing. Cause I mean, who would, if you're not like, if you're learning English as a second language. So like she'll catch those things. And that's how I know like the big stuff isn't making it through.
There could be a pretty epic outtake montage of our practice rounds at the end of the year that
once
we'll never,
you retire, I think
that will never see the light of day.
So, yeah, we're here. I mean, it's great to be here. My like competitive season is over. I had a great little ability to play some tournaments, and I enjoyed that. I'm looking forward to getting in shape and getting back to it. I'm very motivated still, so that's exciting. But right now it's fun because I get to put my full focus and energy towards capturing content of all our players. That's been fun, and I think it's good for the team, especially in like such beautiful spots this weekend, next week. It's a great time to be available to film. Yeah, we're coming down the home stretch. I went to Canada last week. You're half of Lizotte.
That's right.
We did Niagara Falls. Have you guys ever been to Niagara Falls?
I was driving through Buffalo and I saw the sign.
You?
Have I been to Niagara Falls?
Yeah.
Multiple times, yes.
Oh, really?
Yes. Yeah. Very nice.
Yeah, I went to Niagara. We went to Toronto to see the Lumineers, which is Maria's favorite band. And then we went to Montreal, where my cousin lives. And secretly, in my opinion, one of the best cities in North America. It is unbelievable. It feels like you're in Europe. It's a really amazing city, too. 60% of the population is fluent in English and French. It's the most bilingual city in the world. And
whoa.
90% of the population of Montreal is fluent in French. And, I mean, it's a massive city. It's like the sixth.
It's like an hour and a half from here, right?
It's like two hours. 2 hours
north.
That's
wild.
And it's, I mean, it totally feels like Europe. I mean, there's not a single American.
We should make a pro tour event happen in Montreal.
We should make a pro tour event happen in Montreal.
All right, I'm on it.
I honestly think, too, like, I feel like Canada is really.
Deserves a stop.
It deserves more than one.
Toronto,
like,
Montreal, Vancouver.
What if
totally
you played? What if you played a pro tour at Toronto Island Disc Golf Course?
Okay, let me just say one thing. I'll put it out there in the universe. If someone makes a Canadian Pro Tour stop happen in the next 5 years, that year I'm going to play with the Canadian flag next to my name instead of German.
Whoa. That's sweet. What's the
breaking
closest,
news.
The
breaking
closest
news.
We've had was Silver Series, right? At PEI?
Yes.
Okay, you won that last year.
2 years ago.
2 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
Tasmania
and
Challenge.
And like no one was there.
He beat Isaac.
Other than him. Okay. I mean,
yeah, other than just the, you know, four-time major,
well,
two-time
it did,
world champion.
That's low-key one of my favorite wins because it was the week after he won Worlds.
Right, and you beat
so
him.
I basically was the world champion.
You were definitely the world champion at that
yeah.
point.
I think Canada deserves it. I mean, I feel like every even when I went to the Hout Goat Invitational last year, there was a decent amount of people who showed up. I have some really good friends from that area. Yeah, I think Canada would do with a pro tour for sure. But I really enjoyed Montreal. We had some poutine. Have you eaten poutine before?
I've eaten poutine, but I don't know about proper poutine.
How do you say poutine in French?
Poutine.
I don't know. I
poutine.
Just know.
I feel
you
like
gotta
it's
say
a
it with
word.
Like some swagger.
Le poutine.
Putain. No, that's wrong.
Poutine?
That's not a good word, right?
I don't think that's a good word, but it's fine.
Oh no. Poutine is probably one of my favorite things ever.
It's quite heavy. It gets you full really fast.
It's good for sharing.
Yeah, that's what we did. We shared a tray of poutine. And I need to go back to that city more.
McDonald's has McPoutine.
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
It's crazy. And everybody, like, everybody walking down the street is just like, and it's just like, wow, am I in Europe or am I not?
You're in French Canada.
French Canada. And then, yeah, we make a little jaunt down to a beautiful place. And now we're playing, you're playing, the first playoff event. I didn't know that this year we went back-to-back on Brewster. Have we ever done that before?
No, we're doing that a lot lately. We're going back-to-back on a lot of courses.
I know this year it's for the AM side.
Interesting.
Because they played on Fox today, and then they played Brewster the weekend. But the biggest news that has happened...
Wait, one more thing before biggest news. Just thinking of Canada, I was last week after Michigan. On Monday, I played the urban disc golf thing.
Oh, are you going to tell us about this?
No, I'm not going to tell what happened. I'm just going to say that we were playing right on the river Detroit that separates Detroit from Canada. So this is why I thought of it, because I saw Canada on the other side of the river. And I can't spoil what happens in this thing because it'll drop maybe in like 3 or 4 weeks. But probably the most unbelievable shot I've ever seen in my life happened in this challenge. So I recommend everyone to go check that out when it's live.
I have been told this story.
It's the most unlikely thing to possibly happen in Frisbee golf.
I've been told the story, and I am eagerly awaiting
no spoilers
to watch it. It was crazy.
Was it filmed well?
It was filmed okay, but it'll never do it justice on how insane it was.
So the biggest news that came out of the last 2 weeks was something we've actually talked about, I feel like, multiple episodes now. Kristen Lett and her mental adventure this season that she's been on. Most of it pretty bad. And it has essentially reached a temporary conclusion with a announcement a few days ago that she is stepping away from touring for the remainder of this season and next season, and has no plans after that. I'm curious how you guys feel about that. And then my second question is, does she represent a percentage of players on tour who would also do the same thing if they had the financial ability to do what she's doing? Because I have a theory that there's a lot of players on tour who are burned out and stressed and in their own head and have been for years, but they don't have the same capacity to just stop the way that she can, because she's obviously earned the highest of highs of this game for many years, and like financially can take a break if she wants to.
Yeah, I mean, first off, I want to just hats off to Kristen for making a tough decision like that, because I mean, she's one of the biggest superstars that we have in disc golf, especially if you're looking at it through the Estonian and European lens. She won like Athlete of the Year in Estonia just outright. So,
and for all the women, I think she's very international disc golf women. She has been a kind of flame carrier, like a torchbearer.
And she had a pretty meteoric rise to the top. And for the time she has been on tour, she's obviously been dominant. So it's a pretty amazing success story, especially being a little bit later in her life, comparatively speaking, to a lot of her competitors. But yeah, I mean, she had to make a tough decision, because with great power comes great responsibility. And that's what it ultimately came down to through my eyes. It's a heavy burden to be expected to win every single week, to play on your home turf and feel like you're carrying the weight of your country. And all those things, while it's a great honor, if you do it over and over again and people expect you to keep doing it, it can tear you apart. And with the amount of travel that a disc golfer has to do throughout the year, it becomes so catabolic. And it's not like even Kristen Tatar, one of the biggest superstars in this world of disc golf, like if most Estonians would probably think, oh yeah, she's flying like first class, she's getting to the US and it's like she has her Porsche there and it's like probably not that bad. That's not the case. As soon as Kristen Silver come to the US, it's like find the cheapest rental car, get in an Airbnb, drive these long distances. And I mean, Kristen's a mom as well. I think we forget that a lot of the time. And from my perspective, it just, she's accomplished everything that you could ever want to in disc golf. And some people don't feel like they have to keep doing it. And for her to draw the line in the sand and say, okay, you know, I'm going to prioritize other things I want to do. I want to live a happy and fulfilled life. And if disc golf isn't doing that for me, then I'm going to pull away. And she says she still wants to be involved in the community. Like, I think that obviously Kristen still loves disc golf and, you know, maybe she will play more in the future, but I think it's going to be on her terms and that's going to be what's best for her and her family moving forward. And I just, if Kristen's listening to this, I just wanted to say, like, congratulations. I think it's a tremendous choice. And if you ever want to come back to disc golf, it's here for you.
Mm-hmm. What did you think? Because I feel like you have, over your career, have like had moments where you have thought about doing something like that, but you haven't.
Quitting. Yeah, definitely. I think most of us have had ideas and thoughts and moments. But she, I think, is obviously in a completely different boat than any of us really have ever been. I mean, I've never been number one or near number one, and I've never won that many tournaments in a row or in general, and I've never had that many sponsorships or like public billboards of me in my home country and city. Like, that stuff would freak me out. I already know it. I've always been super happy and thankful that disc golf is on a fame level of you can have a normal life outside of the disc golf course.
Pretty much.
Which, I mean, I get recognized at the airport basically every time I go nowadays. Probably not every time, but close. Every now and then in like a grocery store or in public places with my kids, people come up and say hi, and it's always been so few that it's fun and kind of cool. But no, being famous has always been one of my biggest things I didn't want to do in my life, because I don't know, we get like a little taste of it, and for all the mega celebrities in the world that just go crazy, and we've all heard the stories, the sad things that happen, it's like I understand it, I get it. And fame and money just doesn't do it for humans for some reason, at least for most of them.
Very unnatural.
Yeah. So, yeah, Kristen, when I saw the message, I mean, Natalia, my wife, read it first, and she woke up in the morning, she said, wow, Kristen just retired. And I was like, whoa, that's crazy. I mean, I can't really say I didn't expect it or see it coming, but at the same time, it was still a bit shocking and surprising. I think mainly I felt like a bit sad for the sport, and not only FPO, mainly FPO probably, but also the sport in general. Like, she was such an ambassador and person in the sport. Mm-hmm. Like, everything, I don't know, I was always really impressed with how normal she was and nice. And I could just relate to so many things that she said, and the way she said it always really impressed me. So I'm just, yeah, it's sad that it ended the way it did. But then again, if she's happier without it, then of course all power to her, and she should do what makes her happy.
Yeah, I think it's a weird balance, because so many of the top players have gained so much from this, and it almost feels like they can't complain about their life because they're in a place of such privilege. And I think, like you were saying too, about like everybody wants fame, it's sort of the same with the camping. Like everybody wants like the s'more in the lawn chair looking out over the lake at sunset. Like everybody wants that. But like, no matter what level you are in life, whether you're a construction worker or super famous pop star, you're going to have elements to your life that are great and rewarding, and you're going to have elements to your life that are annoying and frustrating. And I think that there is a myth amongst a lot of people that the more famous and rich you get, the less annoying things you have to deal with. And I think that's totally wrong. I think that as you get rich and famous, your lifestyle changes, and so the annoying things don't decrease, they just change. And so, like, the annoying things that you have to deal with are just different, and that doesn't mean that they're less. It does mean that you have, like, financial stability, but the problem is that you only feel financial instability when you don't have it. Once you're financially secure, it's not this thing that you just, like, wake up every day and think, oh, thank God I'm, like, financially stable. Like, that's just not, it's like, it becomes your new standard. Like, that is a thing. And so everybody's like, oh, money doesn't make you happy. Well, because you start living a rich person's life. Like, you start living like a rich person. And at that point, then you're living this life that demands a certain amount of money in every month. And so all of a sudden, there can be this pressure of like, well, if you like change your
lifestyle. Unsolicited advice, lay out all your expenses and figure out how much you are spending each month and the amount it takes for your life to function.
Yeah.
And then cut down on those bills. I'm about to switch from AT&T to Visible because I'm spending way too much on my phone bill.
Yeah. No, but it's just like, that's a big myth, I think, that exists, is that it is just not this rise to like complete and other like bliss. It is not just this. There's still things you have to do. And I think it's almost like sometimes can be more frustrating because there's this society expectation that you've made it. So why can you, like, you're not allowed to complain.
And it comes down to personality type as well. And I think Simon and I are kind of in the same realm to a certain degree. It's like when you compare us two to, say, like a Paul and Ricky, it's like we've beaten Paul and Ricky, and there's been times in our career where the expectation of us was to keep pushing to get to their level. But I don't have that personality type to just be wanting to win all the time. Like, that's going to tear me apart after a while. And based on what I heard Kristen saying from all of her interviews, it didn't really seem like she was all that competitive. Obviously, she had an incredible competitive drive, but I don't think she was necessarily thinking of, like, her legacy in
and
the
I
sport.
I don't think she won a lot because she wanted it more in the moments. I think she won a lot because she was head and shoulders skill-wise above every other player in the field.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I and it wasn't because, like, this will of, like, she didn't have to will it in. She was better than everyone.
She had the best game and mental game.
Well, and she just has, I mean, all she has to do is go out and shoot her average or even 10 points below, and there's not a single person in the field who can beat her unless they shoot above their average.
Right.
So I think it's just unfortunate the way that she had a couple, like off the course kind of like things and just life in general. And it's very unfortunate sequence of events that kind of caused these really like just heartbreaking losses back to back.
Maybe they're all fortunate in her eyes.
Maybe. I just think it's interesting that she's made that choice to step away. And I think that I'm curious if every other disc golf pro, like if you take every touring pro right now on tour and you say, You give them all enough money to be set for life. How many of them, like, stop right now?
To be set for life? That is a very wide, like, spectrum of possible,
like,
numbers.
Give them, like, whatever. Let's say you give them enough money to figure their life out for, like, 5 years or something like that. But, like, if you take away that logistical issue, like, how many people on tour, like, would stop if they could?
I'd say a small number. I would think, I'll speak on my own perspective, is I would play on my terms and where I want to play. Like, I'm in Vermont. I love Vermont. I want to play here. I want to go play Milo McIver. I want to go play Olympus. But there's certain places like Peoria I don't care if I ever go to or play again in my life. So it's like, I think I'd play on my own terms if that were the case. Mm-hmm. Because everybody out here loves disc golf and wants to play.
Yeah, I mean, I think there are touring pros out there right now who have forgotten that. They've lost that love. And they are touring because they, like, what else would they do with their life and be at a similar, like, rung on the ladder? And, like, I think that there's, like, too many. I was talking to one of my
Can I make a hot take? I'd say if you're older than 25 and you are constantly losing money, constantly losing mummy, you probably should not be on tour.
Yeah.
I'd say if you have a good track record, or like making your way up the ranks, and you're below 25 and you're like starting to place well in events, you have a good sponsor, stay on the road. But if it's not worth it financially to stay on the road past 25 and you're like using credit cards and getting deep into debt, I would say, if I was your coach, I'd say you need to play some local A tiers and switch to Visible. It's not sponsored by Visible.
I agree.
I mean, I think it's also like a very unique way of life. A lot of traveling. And also, when you start at such a young age, you kind of miss out on whatever our current version of higher education is, whether that's like going and getting a gig or doing something. And I mean, it's a very kind of niche set of skills that you gain being good at disc golf and being good in the disc golf world. And I think it can be scary for people who have done it for a certain amount of time to feel like they can leave and rejoin like regular society. I was talking to Blake Iverson, and he compared it. He said the tour is like a drug. Some people get hooked and some people don't. And some people have a really hard time quitting, even though they know they should. But they're so scared of the FOMO of like not being at the next event, that fear of not being at the next event overrides their like general dissatisfaction with like what they're doing with their life at that moment.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, I think it depends what your values are too. Like, if your values are to get rich and make a bunch of money, then I would follow, like, I would agree with your advice there. If your values are to like get rich in life experience and you're not going like tens of thousands of dollars into debt, this is a great way to gain life experience and to see the world. But yeah, I think you need to be more willing to follow your gut. And yeah, I have a lot of respect for Kristen for being able to make that choice. I think her play over the last 5 years has earned her that opportunity to do it that easily.
Kind of like Andrew Luck.
Sure.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
I mean, he got paid.
Mm-hmm.
And he was like, okay. Like, I don't
know.
He had
great numbers.
Yep.
And you're just like, you know, I'm going to take a step back.
Mm-hmm. No, it's unbelievable. So we'll see where she goes in the future. It almost feels a bit like a UC thing where, like, we hope they're not gone forever, but we know they will be gone for a year or two.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think it'll be interesting to see. I think on a positive note, I think that Silva Saarinen should be licking her chops right now because her biggest competition just left. And now, I mean, if I was Silva right now, I would be looking at 2026. Like, I'm going to make my mark. I mean, she won six events.
She's already making her mark now.
I know, but this would be, if you're like really driven like that, which not everybody is, but if you are, if you're like, if you put Gannon Burr's brain into Silva right now in her current situation, she would say to herself, like, I can go out and win all the majors next year, and I can go out and like dominate in a way that like I haven't yet. So maybe she will. Maybe she won't. But you know what we're going to do?
Email?
Yeah, let's do a couple emails here.
Some emails. We're going to do emails until Simon looks at us and says, guys, I want to go listen to music.
Yeah, Fall Fest is starting.
We can listen right now. We can hear it from our room.
We can.
All right. Well, let's get into it. We're going to go through the good ones, not the bad ones.
The question I have is Silver done touring?
Probably, yeah. Maybe they're going to have a little baby lot.
Baby lot.
That has been a...
Also, haven't we all agreed it's let?
Let.
Let.
Why do even the commentators say it wrong? It like really
because
depresses me.
Because they see an A and they can't not say the A with the umlaut.
They're professional commentators.
Are they?
They clearly know what it is.
Are they?
I wonder if they ask Kristen and she just said lot just to make their life easier. Because she's so impolite.
Do you think they ask?
I would be devastated if they don't. If they didn't.
But like, do you think they ask the actual player?
Yeah, why not? They talk to them every tournament and their press conference.
You're right.
It's like,
you're right.
Is it lot or let? Let. Okay, done. Done forever. Thanks, bye.
Cool, thanks, bye.
That's how easy it would be.
All right, here's our first email from Ricky Colson. Dear Crush Pepper, I hope you're doing well. I wanted to pose two questions that have been on my mind. First, why does the tour seem so heavily focused on open bomber courses? It feels like there's an increasing preference for longer, more grueling layouts that favor power over precision. Second, do you believe that these demanding courses are contributing to the rise in player injuries? It seems that more and more athletes are suffering from season-ending injuries that don't fully heal. What do you think about that?
I don't feel like there's that many like big open courses anymore.
I feel like this question was perfect like 2 years ago, 3 years ago.
There was a while, like I'll say like when 2021, there was like, I felt like every course was a golf course that was just full on rip fest.
Yeah.
Now I don't feel like that's the case. And even if they are, there's so much OB.
Do you remember when we practiced for Portland Open in 2021 and you looked at me after the first practice round and you were like, I could play bad here and win?
I did. That's what happened. I wish we'd go back to a little bit of that. I haven't thrown like a full-on distance roller in years, and I kind of miss throwing those shots a little bit.
It really seems a bit like a misconception nowadays that we're playing a lot of bomber courses. Like, we really aren't.
I think it was, though. Like, I think 3 or 4 years ago, we were bomber heavy. And
yeah.
I think a lot of the players got pretty pissed about that. And I think they made like a pretty good point to the tour. And I think the tour listened, because this year was by far the most like touch friendly tour in at least 3 or 4 years. I mean, the courses are technical, and which is my like ideal version of golf, which is like shaping power shots through the woods. Like, that is,
yeah,
like the ideal. Like, it takes power to get there. I mean, for me, like hole 15 at Fox Run is like a great example where it's just like shaping power shots through the woods, like,
mm-hmm.
And it's like that is the ultimate skill of our sport. So it's cool to see that. At the same time, we have a tour, so that's, and we've talked about this before, like we have the ability to have different events and not have the identical setup every week. And so, mm-hmm. I mean, we are going to end the season on a golf course, the Tour Championship at Ivy Hill.
It's at Ivy Hill.
Only at Ivy Hill, because Champions Cup is only at Jackson next year.
Oh.
Yeah. New London.
Or sorry, Jackson. Oh my God.
We wish Jackson.
May it rest in peace. New London.
It's coming back.
They tweak some stuff at Ivy Hill, I know. But, I mean, we are ending at a golf course. To go on that second question, I think that was definitely part of what was contributing to the rise in player injuries. I think a kind of base of people who are trying to throw hard but don't really have a full concept of, like, how that part of your body works and, like, the stresses that you put on it. I think, like, established sports have a very good understanding of what typical injuries those typical movements are going to cause. Like, in baseball, Tommy John is, like, a super, like, common thing. We know that that happens from tearing your UCL when you're throwing a curveball too young.
No, I think the main issue is that we don't really have coaches or physical therapists or anyone's really... I mean, nowadays, obviously, it's better than it's ever been, but...
Still nothing.
4 or 5 years ago, I mean, we were all kids just doing whatever we wanted.
Yep.
Almost all of us, at least. And I think that's the main cause of injuries and stuff like that. I wouldn't really blame the courses, even though I definitely have had that thought, and I sometimes wish, man.
I mean, there's players out there just grinding. Like, if you look at Aaron Gossage, Ezra Aderholt.
Luke Taylor. 500 putts a day all off season last year.
They're throwing so much. And, you know, that's... I think you need to throw a ton up until a certain point. And then you need to realize, okay, I have the skill. Now I just need to back off a little bit and do other things that are going to increase my skill and longevity. Because then you're going to be able to do that for longer. If you go to every single Pro Tour event and go across the pond, back, across, it's just going to be, you're burning the candle at both ends. And, you know, everybody's different. Some people have the right genetics and drive to do it, and they should, they can. I know I can't. So I'm just speaking on behalf of myself and people like me, but
right, next email from Micah. Wow. Suferer. In darts, it is good to minimize moving parts to create consistency and help with accuracy. I'm guessing you guys can bomb discs while doing a standstill. Why don't we see more standstill shots on the pad for a tunnel or anything 400 feet and in?
Watch Casey White or Silva Sarin or UC Maresma.
Yeah, go watch UC Maresma.
Yeah, that's a good question. I know Schuster, like, back in the day when he was number one in the world, loved standstills. It's kind of old-fashioned almost, I would almost say, to do standstills. I don't know why. I've personally always felt way more comfortable doing a little run-up. Like, I even run up from, like, 150 feet sometimes when I obviously distance-wise or power-wise don't have to. It just makes me feel like more confident to hit my line, I guess, in some way.
But I think that's, like, what your muscles are used to, because it's like, I mean, James does the same thing, right? I mean, there's, we had a joke, gosh, I was filming Conrad's card, and then, we were with Cal Longquist, and Cal looked at James, and he was like, I think your run-up for an 80-foot throw is longer than my run-up for a 500-foot throw. But James basically said, which I think is part of what you think, is that it's like so much of his throws already are with momentum built into it, like a run-up. And so, like, doing a throw and being accurate without the momentum behind that feels weird for him. Like, and so he wants to create a little bit of motion going. And I throw some standstills, but, like, I try to add some footwork because it just creates some sort of movement that isn't just static.
I don't think the email here, the question is not very thought through, because darts is clearly a very precise, precision, accurate movement.
That doesn't need power.
Throwing a disc is such a powerful momentum building and, I mean, explosive motion. Like, you can't really compare. It's like the question... The question doesn't make sense. The question should be, like, why, if we would run up for putts, then that would be a fair comparison, because putting is a precision motion. And, I mean, we all stand still for putts most of the time.
I've seen some people run into their putts.
I've done it. Next question. Or maybe not a question, maybe just a statement.
Okay.
Okay.
Alex Joy. Buongiorno, my dudes. Here's a question for y'all. If you could design an 18-hole course using any hole from the Pro Tour, past or present, what hole would you start with and what hole would you end with?
Oh, okay. Should we make the rules? Does it have to be an actual hole one, an actual hole 18, or can we use any hole for it? Any hole for
any
one.
Any hole for one and 18.
This is tough. On tour. This is tough. Eagle.
Give us a second, Alex.
I'll give you 18. I'll play. Does that have to be? It can be just whatever hole.
Mm-hmm.
I'm gonna do 18 at Solitude in Utah.
Whoa!
It's like 1,000 feet straight down a mountain.
I've played it. It's insane.
It's too fun to throw. And then hole one. I'm gonna go hole one at Harlow Platts Disc Golf Course in Boulder, Colorado.
Wow, that's pretty.
That's where it all started.
Wow, those are much. That's, you went in a way different direction than my brain was going. That's good. Very good.
I just wanted to speed up the question.
Oh.
Hole one, you want like a great fat gallery. I honestly think like hole one in Maple Hill is so great for a hole one. I just love that everybody can sit there and then watch you bomb it, but it's not like.
I agree, the fun shot.
It's a fun shot.
I don't like that we're throwing into freaking a field of Christmas trees.
Yeah, it's so unpredictable. That's like if I had to say like my one beef with Maple Hill, because it's a great course, is the shots that you are throwing into a Christmas tree field and you are completely rolling the dice on your stance. But I think
I have no good answer for this. I can't think.
My hole 18 would be hole 17 at USDGC.
Perfect. What's that wide open hole at the Vesa Vufa Par?
Hole 5.
Yeah, that's a good one.
It's a good hole 1.
Uh-huh.
You can just go 360, it doesn't matter where it lands.
Yeah.
Vesa Vufa?
I think a hole 1 should be a hole where you can just unleash.
Yeah.
Just like, all right, let's get this started. Like just a confidence builder, a loosen upper. What's the hole on tour where you can just chuck it and it really doesn't matter within like 300 feet where it lands? I don't know what hole that is.
I mean, hole one of Maple Hill.
Yeah.
Kind of true. You're kind of right.
True.
Yeah.
Hole one of Maple Hill, you can just absolutely unleash. I also feel like hole one at Preserve, you can like pretty much. I mean, it's a little.
No,
sketchy.
No, it's sketchy.
You can't quite unleash. Well, that was a good question. I like that.
I don't even know if that might be the only hole on tour where you can just unleash now.
Yeah. Yeah.
And even there, you don't want to just unleash because it sucks going right.
Well, I can think of another one you can unleash. Jonesboro. I don't know the hole numbers anymore, but the par four, like over the creek and up the hill and with the basement with the back slope. Like on that hole, you can just full send. That's fun.
There's some good Jonesboro holes.
Yeah.
Sounds
like we need more full send kind of holes.
To all, from Spree, did the rubber ducky enhance your experience at the Preserve? Yes.
I would say yes. It was.
Yes.
Talking point of so many conversations.
When I go to my memories of what I remember from the Preserve, the first image in my mind is me and Silva standing inside the duck.
Of course.
Yeah, it was great.
Joey and Simon, what model/weights of darts are you throwing? Is Littler better than Humphreys?
I throw the Harrow's Oblivion. And the weight, I believe, is a 24 gram. And I think I don't know. Yeah, Littler is better than Humphreys.
Did you see what he just posted?
I did.
That was a good tease.
The commercial?
Yeah.
I thought I was a bit dorky.
But did you see the one before it?
No.
Oh, well, so the day before, he just teased and he said, I'm leaving darts.
Oh, okay.
And then at the end, you can hear him in the background being like, do you think they'll fall for that? And it's just good. So he could go, he's a big FIFA guy, and FIFA, or is it FIFA? Just FIFA 26 just came out or something like that?
Yep, that was a FIFA
ad. It was a FIFA ad. I have no idea what my darts are called. I do know somewhere in my phone I have it, but they were gifted to me from a friend, so I never knew what they were called. And then and I don't know what weight they are, but I think Littler's better than Humphreys right now. And this question, the last part of this, is to Eagle. Who's got the best chowder?
The best chowder?
Chowder.
Oh, in Boston. Yeah. Well, up in New England. I can't wait to get down to Boston and give me some good chowder.
What accent is that?
It's Boston. You know, I'm from Boston. I spend most of my time in Portland, Maine, though. It's a good spot. You know, they got some good chowder down. They got some good chowder in Worcester at the Simon Lizotte kitchen.
I have no idea.
What a good answer. All right, last question.
All right.
I don't want it to end.
Oh, all right. This actually seen this one recently. Here's a great one. Da Zombie Lord. That's a great email. Dazombielord@gmail.com. I should have done that.
Disqueenia's next signature series.
How much praise do you think the Holy Shot would have if James didn't go on to win the playoff?
It would be the greatest... Oh, what's the word? Anticipation fail.
Yes, the greatest tease.
Yeah. Like, I don't think it's possible, though. That's not how the universe works for some reason.
He was going to win that.
I really hope before I die, someone explains on what's going on in this freaking universe, because I don't get it. I just want to understand.
I think it would still have a lot of praise, but I think it would always be followed by, did he win the playoff? Oh, no, he didn't win the playoff.
If James wouldn't have won... I don't think it would be even really talked about ever anymore.
Yeah, I agree.
Wild.
All right, last one.
James was on my card today, by the way, when I aced, so shout out.
That's sweet.
Wow. That's why you aced.
No, actually, double shout out to James Proctor, because he was on my card in Estonia and today for both my aces.
Now, so if you have a James on your card... You know it's going to be.
The more James is, the better.
Yeah.
All right, here's the last one we're going to read for today. From Nathan Korth. Hello, looking for the best courses in the U.S. that are an easy drive from an airport. A friend and I are looking to travel to play disc golf and would love your recommendations.
Cincinnati, 100% my favorite airport in the entire U.S.
Really?
Idlewild is 13 minutes away.
Whoa.
Yeah. I think I've said it on the record many times.
Wow. Cincinnati's your favorite airport in...
Not close.
Why?
It has everything. It's clean. It's not packed, but it's still big enough to have nice restaurants and convenient things. And it has the updated, nice electronics that you don't have to take off your shoes or get your laptop out. And everyone that works there just seems like kind of okay with their life, which is a nice breath of fresh air. Because
that's so true, though. So many people that you encounter at the airport.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not trying to like...
You don't get yelled at through TSA?
I mean, for some reason, post-COVID, like, people who work a job sometimes just seem miserable. Or is that a completely wrong observation that I've made?
No, you're right.
I mean, I get it. I don't want to work a job, but...
I feel their sympathy, or I empathize with them. I'm like, I wouldn't want to be trapped where you are, but... I'm not. I feel bad for you. Okay, so that's... Idlewild is a good recommendation. I mean, shoot, you can fly to Burlington. We're not that far from Burlington, but that's a tiny little airport to go to.
Charlotte, Portland.
Tampa. I mean, Minneapolis, let me plug my own city.
Huntsville, Alabama.
Portland. Portland, go to Pier Park. And
yeah.
I mean, I think there's... honestly, I feel like most of the Pro Tour stops are... What's the furthest you've had to drive from an airport yet? From Sacramento down to Champions Cup?
Well, I skip all the events that make me drive far, so I don't have to really drive far anymore.
Ledgestone.
Probably Sacramento.
It would be Ledgestone, technically, if you don't fly to Peoria.
Yep.
And it's a 3-hour drive from Chicago.
Yeah, Waco is always annoying, and Peoria, Emporia, Jonesboro, like all the ones I don't really go to anymore.
Yeah, easy drive from the airport. I mean, I think big metros, but I mean, Austin, Texas, Portland, Charlotte, all the cities that are good are already like big with airports. So,
and if you want to go in the winter, quick dark horse shout out, Fort Lauderdale randomly pops up in my mind because Worcester flies straight to Fort Lauderdale, and it is beautiful weather there in the winter, and they actually have some really fun disc golf courses around there.
Well, just like that.
One more.
One more.
One more.
Wow.
Pick a funny one.
All right.
It's 4 minutes until Simon wanted to be done.
Yes, sir.
You can send us more emails at what's the address?
It is lilscovilleunits@gmail.com.
And we really like the funny ones and ones that go outside the box, preferably ones that don't ask us about disc golf.
It should involve kissing.
No, disc golf questions are okay, but think outside the box. Think outside the circle of your mind.
There you go. I can keep talking for a bit when you're looking. Okay.
Here's a great email that isn't a question, but it's about this woman who got super into disc golf, and her husband had always been into disc golf, and she wrote me this whole email about the thing that got her hooked, and she thinks it's so crazy because of how disinterested she was in disc golf before getting hooked, but how close she was to it because of her husband, and now how hooked she is, and it all came down to this one moment, and she said, he pulled something up on YouTube I never expected, prefacing it with, these are some of the best players in the world. Is it a sick tournament shot? No. Is it an awesome ace? No. It's not even a crazy trick shot, which surely would have gotten me hooked. Instead, on my screen are two boys wearing alien abduction costumes.
That video. Wow.
Is it one of the dumbest things I've ever seen? Yes. And yet, it got me. I fell in love with disc golf that day, in part because awesome. That video was completely absurd and hilarious, but also because the next video I watched, Simon might not like it when he hears the real answer that won me over. I almost feel bad for telling you.
That, yeah. What a good video that turned out somehow.
That was incredible.
It was unbelievable. And again, it didn't make any sense.
And she said the next video she watched was the $2,000 disc.
Oh,
and she was
sitting
there watching this video thinking, why on earth would somebody pay this much for a disc? And then in a horrible twist of fate, when you go to sign it, the marker exploded all over the disc. Those two videos, that's what got Emily hooked on disc golf.
I miss those days so much.
But thanks, Emily, for...
We need to do a video like that again.
I still have the costume.
Really?
In my garage.
Oh my gosh.
That would be great. You should do the practice round next week in them. The first hole.
Maybe we can do one.
Gosh.
That would be hilarious.
You played so well in that costume. I don't understand how you shot as well as you did. You got an ace.
I did.
That's proof of... The universe. Just
okay, here we go. This is actually it from Matthew. And I got to say, guys, we're almost at the top of our inbox now. So you guys got to repopulate our emails.
Okay.
My two favorite hobbies are board games and disc golf. I love seeing you guys playing games on Simon's vlog. Two questions. Favorite games on tour to play, and who are the other big board gamers on tour? I'll let you go.
Well, we've been playing Seven Wonders 90% of the time, I think. We dabbled in a couple other ones, but I mean, Seven Wonders took over the entire year, I'd say. Mm-hmm. And
we've been messing with some smaller ones when we don't want to, like,
yeah,
some Citadels, some Love Letter. You got Maria.
Love Letter, we played a good amount. We played a good amount of Love Letter. Shout out to that game. That's a really good game in a small package and yes, easy to learn and still different every time.
And the new game that Harry got for sale is all in a similar vein. Like, it's simple, but it's fun. Like, I've enjoyed these games that we played. Other big board gamers on tour. Let's say Germ is the biggest, obviously. And I think the whole Jomez crew, I know they all play with him. Most of the cameramen are big board gamers. I know that, like, I would say most disc golfers are, like, amenable to playing board games, and most of them, like, will play. But I feel like I see Casey White playing a lot. We played some Viticulture with him.
Yeah, Viticulture is also a great game.
I see Calvin sometimes in the right settings with the right friends playing some board games. But I think our group has probably played the most.
We need a new game for next year.
Yeah, we do. And we're going to find it, and I'm excited. I mean, this is the most I've played Seven Wonders since I was like 13 years old. Last year when I was on the road and the year before, it was all Wingspan. Which is, everybody kind of got tired of playing that because you're always playing with Germ, and Germ just knows everything. I mean, he knows the entire game. He plays so many online rounds that he knows, you pull out a card and you say like the first half of the first name of the bird, and Germ knows the bird's full name, where it's from, what expansion it's part of, and all the power-ups that it can do, like that. And it's, I don't know, it can... It gets old losing every time. So yeah, that's I think there are a lot of board gamers out on the road, and we enjoy. I think it's a good way to like pass the time
without staring at your phone.
Without staring at your phone and without exhausting yourself physically. And that's a key thing.
Well, we do get very competitive, and I think it does take a mental toll on us.
Yes.
We almost want to smack each other.
I think
after
I get
game.
More grouchy getting bad luck in board games than like the rest of tour.
Yep.
Me and Ratana play a game called Sky Joe, and it's a luck-based game, and it feels like I'm playing disc golf sometimes, and
dude,
I get so frustrated.
I hate that. I don't want to play luck-based games.
Then play chess.
Me and Joey play chess.
Yeah, we play every day now.
Uh-huh, yeah.
And on your phones.
Pummeled by Eagle recently.
Yeah, that wasn't your best game.
No, it was not. Well, Fall Fest is rocking. It's been rocking, and we're going to get down and join in. Thank you all so much for listening. I'm really glad we got to get through a bunch of your lovely emails. I encourage you to send us more. Boys, thanks for being here. Thanks for making the time. And hopefully we get to make a Lazat Mansion episode next week.
Yeah, we probably can.
Everyone at the Lazat Casa. Lazada Casa.
I love it.
What's our title? Is it mail time?
Mail time.
What did you say about mommy?
Mummies?
Mummies?
Something mummies? No, I say mail time with the boys.
Okay.
Deal.
Sweet. Well,
thanks for listening. Wish us luck on the weekend here. Eagle is playing a solid tournament. I am playing an okay tournament. But now Fox Run is waiting.
Until next time, keep on dreaming. Peace.
I'm getting old.
I felt the vibrations from here.
All right, next question.